and decided to give one servant 5 talents of money. That's a huge amount. And to another, he gave 2 talents, another huge amount. And the third, he gave 1 talent, which was still pretty darn large. And he gave each servant the amount that he thought they could handle according to their ability. Then the merchant left on his trip, and the servants each did something with the money that they received. The man with 5 talents went out right away, invested it, used his money, earned 5 more. The man with 2 talents also invested that money wisely, gained 2 more talents. But the man with 1 talent took his talent and buried it deep in the ground to keep that money safe. He didn't put it in the bank to earn interest. He didn't invest in a business or stock market. He didn't buy wholesale goods, resell them. He didn't even go to Las Vegas and gamble with it. And he had lots of time to do something with it. He could have bought seeds and planted a garden and sold the produce, whatever. But he didn't do anything. Now, after this very long trip, the wealthy merchant came back, wanted to know what his servants had accomplished with what he had given them. The man with 5 talents came and said, "Hey, you trusted me with 5 talents. I made 5 more. And the merchant looked at him and smiled and said, "Oh, that is a great job. Good and faithful servant. You are trustworthy with a few things, so I will put you in charge of a lot of things. Come and celebrate with me." Then the man with 2 talents came and said, "Well, you know, you trusted me with 2 talents, and I made 2 more. And the master smiled again and replied, "Oh, good job, good job, good and faithful servant. You are trustworthy with a few things, so I will put you in charge of lots of things. Come and celebrate with me." And then the man who'd received 1 talent came and said to the merchant, "Now, I know you work hard for your money. I know you are very frugal. And you're not such a nice guy. So I was afraid to lose any of it. I buried it and kept it safe, and here's your 1 talent. The merchant was not impressed. He said, "You are so very lazy. And even worse, you are cowardly. At the very least, you could have taken it to a bank and collected some interest on it." Then the merchant immediately took that 1 talent away from that man and gave it to the first man who had had 5 talents and used them wisely. So what do we see here? We are accountable to use wisely that which we have been given. We know what we should do, and we have what we need in order to do it. And if we're not sure exactly what to do, we can easily learn from others what to do. And so we are accountable. Today, we are going to look at unconventional church. Diana Butler Bass said that something's happening. We're witnessing the end of church, or at least the end of conventional church. So today, we're going to look at unconventional church, what a lot of different congregations and groups and communities are doing in order to meet those challenges that we've been talking about all week. Some of these are Unitarian Universalist, some are not, but we can learn from everybody. Now, we remember that back on Monday, we looked at research from Faith Formation 2020, about driving forces impacting American religious life. And we noted in that session that there were that these driving forces were being guided by 2 critical questions. Will people be more receptive to organized religion or more resistant to organized religion? And the second question, will people be open to a spiritual life or will that openness decrease? And the different possible responses to these questions led the Faith Formation 2020 researchers to outline 4 possible scenarios or reactions to these critical questions. And we were particularly looking at scenario 3 and 2, the spiritual but not religious, and the unaffiliated and uninterested. Scenario 1 is you all, the vibrant faith with active engagement. But Faith Formation 2020 people looked at the diverse life tasks and religious needs and concerns of each of these four scenarios, as well as the needs and concerns of different generations. So today we're looking at new patterns of congregational life, new faith communities, new ideas that have arisen in response to these different spiritual needs of the different scenarios, as well as different generations. Come on. Move. Thank you. Okay, this is the chart from Faith Formation 2020, looking at the different spiritual needs of the different scenarios that we just looked at. Now, we know that spiritual but not religious folk and the nuns are not going to come looking for us. We know that. 88% of them say that they're not even looking for a faith community, let alone walking in our door. So if we want to engage these folk who are not already affiliated, we have to reach out in new ways, and we're going to look at some of these elements that Faith Formation has outlined. Specifically, we're going to look at digital and web outreach. We're going to look at how our congregations are really looking at a different approach to life issues, third place settings, justice and service projects, public events, the use of spiritual formation, and then, of course, the impact of increasing diversity. Now, it's certainly important to know the reasons why so many people are disaffiliated from organized religion, and we've been looking at that and talking about it, especially in the afternoons, but what now? How can we begin to reach out to the unaffiliated and those disaffected in new ways, in new places that go beyond our four walls and the idea of conventional church as we've known it? Also, Diana Butler Bass has said that people of all ages, not just young adults, but all ages, are changing the questions that they ask about faith and spirituality. Faith was once about knowledge and what we believed. And we used to expend quite a bit of energy as Unitarian Universalists to make sure that people knew what we believed, as you use. But in a postmodern age, the questions have changed. People are now asking, how do I believe? How do I practice my faith in everyday life? What concrete things do Unitarian Universalists do as a result of their faith commitments? People are also asking, why do I believe? What difference does faith make for my life? And my meaning in my life, what difference does it make for the world? And the little sign up there says, I don't believe what you say, I believe what you do. And that is the postmodern approach to faith communities. So we're going to start today with strategies that work with digital media, the web, social media, all of these various kinds of social media platforms, and how those are also a driving force that have been shaping a different approach to faith communities and outreach. Okay. With each advancing generation, we know technology, connections through technology, are becoming more and more important to their lives. And in the case of millennials, it's a major component of their personal identities and their social relationships. 93% of teens and young adults are online. Computer in your pocket, the mobile phone, the iPhone, my lovely little Samsung 6. And 8 to 18-year-olds spend an average of 7.5 hours a day with media. Maybe more. Social media, it is the social interaction among people in which they create, share, exchange information, ideas, pictures, videos in virtual communities and networks. And it's more than that. It's the way people carry on conversations and relationships and share their identity in the larger society now. So we know that young adults are tech natives. They grew up completely digital age, And they don't know life without the internet, Facebook, cell phones, Twitter, Pinterest, etc. 98% of millennials use the internet now. These are slightly later and better demographics. 80% have broadband at home. 97% have a cell phone. 65% have a major smartphone. 34% have a tablet or iPad. 28% own an e-reader. Even teens from families in the lower income levels have some kind of technology. Even if they have no computer at home, they go to libraries and their schools to use them there. And cell phones, let's be real, those are not a luxury. Those are a necessity of life, like food and water and cell phones. Not only are millennials digital natives and are teens digital natives, but younger children too. Babies as young as 10 months are learning to use baby-designed computers. There are children's versions of Kindle out there that you can buy in wonderful, bright nursery colors. So they are going to, from birth, these guys are using technology. Now, we Unitarian Universalists are venturing into the realm, finally, of online religious community. Other faith traditions have been doing it for a lot longer. In recent years, the Church of the Larger Fellowship has undergone a lot of change. You can see it on their website. CLF is the largest UU congregation in the world now. They now call themselves an online spiritual home beyond walls or geography. Their site features opportunities for UU fellowship along with inspirational words and sermons and homilies and reflections and the Quest magazine, which is text and podcast, and video online. They have a weekly talk show, too, called The View, and I'll show you a little video on that in a second. And The View is online every Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern, and they're actually pretty good. Now, the CLF website says whether you believe or whether you belong to another Unitarian Universalist church or if you're turned off by traditional religion, you'll find like-minded people here who find solace and revel in that spirit of fellowship. So let me show you the little video here. So we're finally joining the digital age. Check it out. And notice the cute way they spell view. V-U-U. Now, another thing that we have going right now that we're trying and moving into the digital age is that our Central East region has moved leadership school online. We've moved our leadership school to an online platform to make it really accessible to more people at a lower cost. Now, it's a hybrid, actually. The didactic parts, the course parts, are online. And then there's conversations in small groups that gather in geographic areas throughout our region. So you get both, the best of both worlds. And I have some wonderful flyers in the back about our leadership school and what we're offering this fall semester. Because there's about a dozen classes that you can take at any time on your schedule that are being offered by our regional staff. And it's backed by the sign-up sheet for slides and bibliography, the one I set out yesterday. Okay, come on. Oh, come on. There, you, back. Thank you. All right. You got to talk to it sometimes. You got to talk to your technology, right? Now, research shows that people check out our congregations and our programs and our activities online long before they ever think of visiting our congregations in person. We've known that for years. We also know that email has sped up congregational communication enormously, whether for good or for bad. We've all heard about those lovely church fights over email, and many congregations have had to develop strong covenantal policies around the use of church email lists. I mean, we really do need to do a good job of educating our members on how to use social media. But churches now use much more than just email or websites or even Facebook. There are numerous congregational blogs, online spiritual communities. There's open classes online about everything from UU polity and history and other religious topics. There are discussions online. There are open webinars online and a whole lot more on beyond internet, on beyond email. Congregations are very quickly splitting into two very distinct camps, and this is throughout all faith traditions. Those that use social media effectively, and those that hope it all goes away. It's not going away. We need to very deliberately, intentionally consider how technology concretely impacts our congregations now and will do so even more in the future. It is not going away. I want to show you a little video. It's an example of how one of our congregations, First Unitarian in Rochester, New York, is using media in its outreach and welcoming messages. And I want you to listen to the lyrics, these lyrics that invite and welcome and are pointed to folk that are outside their walls.
Come on, we don't want to be late for homecoming.
I'm coming home, I'm coming home. Tell the world that I'm coming home. Let the rain wash away all the pain of yesterday.
I know my kingdom awaits, and they've forgiven my mistakes.
I'm coming home, I'm coming home.
Tell the world that I'm coming.
I'm back where I belong. I never felt so strong, yeah.
Feeling like there's nothing that I can't try.
And if you're with me, put your hands high, 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 high. Hey, hey. And if you're with me, put your hands high.
Our brothers and sisters have been gone too long. Why do we make a war zone in someone's home?
I need some folks that listen to my hurt. The ones who value me and know my worth.
A faith that feels the call to heal the earth.
Heal the earth.
Joshua, break your heart. Be the change you want to
see. Be the change.
We come from all traditions, ethnic groups and generations.
Your hands high.
I'm coming home, I'm coming home. Tell the world that I'm
my friends say Jenny's weird because she has two moms.
How come I have to have an iPod to belong?
You know what Betsy says, she's right and I am wrong.
And now my boyfriend says he's gone if we don't get it on.
I need to talk about these things so I can go back strong.
Bring it on.
You know we're here to help you grow, to hear that voice inside you that you'll come to know. So if you're in it, put your hands high.
So let's begin and put your hands high.
Yeah.
Each one at times of need, unsettling our apathy and greed. Inspired by our goals like Susan B. Be one, there'll be a bit of heresy. Yeah! So if you're in it, put your hands high. So let's begin and join your hands high. Yeah! Whatever we do or dream, begin it. Boldness is genius and power and magic in it. Let us be bold in our living and our loving. Put your hands high!
The blonde woman was the minister, Karen Anderson. Maybe you've heard that name. She's preached at GA a few times. And the congregation is now about up to 1,400 folk in Rochester, New York. But they have a wonderful online ministry that you might want to check out their website. Now, some more ideas from Faith Formation 2020. We are told that we really need to shift from one type fits all kind of standard ideas of religious education curriculum to a faith formation concept that is tailored for different ages at different life stages and in different contexts. And, you know, think of some of the life issues that people face that they might want to come and talk about. Marriage versus singlehood, especially around millennials. Increasingly busy lives for families raising children. Partnerships outside of formal marriage. Jobs, finances, retirement. All these are life issues that we should be talking about in our congregations. Now, the UUA's Tapestry of Faith is a series of programs and resources for all ages that nurture our UU identity and spiritual growth, transforming our faith and vital communities of justice and love. And there's programs for all ages, adults, youth, children, multi-generational groups. Now, one example of a Tapestry of Faith curriculum that's geared to a special life concern that is of particular interest to adults and young adults as well as retirees is the new one called Wisdom Path, Money, Spirit, and Life. And it's a Tapestry of Faith program, and free, for adults that explores our attitudes and behaviors toward money in our everyday, spiritual, and congregational lives. So these are the kinds of things that a lot of people are looking for. Now, whoops, come back you again. We're going to look at third place settings. This is huge. Faith Formation 2020 finds that a way to reach out to unaffiliated people is through the use of third place settings. A third place setting is outside of the home and outside of the workspace and outside of church. But outside of church, outside of the home. It is the beyond part of congregations and beyond. I mean, that's, you've heard that phrase before. We're being urged to help create larger UU footprints in our communities through service to and with our larger communities and the use of third place settings. Third place settings are coffee shops, public witness sites, parks, recreational areas, homeless shelters, the steps of the state capitol, a whole host of alternatives. Our Standing on the Side of Love program asks all of us to take our UU values and live them out in the larger society. And in our third place settings, we offer hospitality. We offer relationship, a chance to build relationships. We host spiritual conversations in these spaces. We provide programs, activities that nurture the spiritual life of people. Remember that? Spirituality, but not religious stuff. And this is one of the examples that is really taking off in Washington, D.C. right now. It's called the Sanctuaries. It's a diverse arts community that was founded by UU minister Eric Martinez-Restley, and it's based on our UU values. They did the video at the start of this morning. The community meets in different locations for a variety of different purposes. And their website says that their mission is to grow your spiritual, they nurture your spiritual and artistic growth. Collaborate. They create spaces for you to take risks and collaborate across artistic mediums with creative people you would never have met otherwise. And the third element is share. And they provide people with unique opportunities to share their art with audiences across the city and to create local partnerships and participate in events. So they offer workshops and open mics and day-long retreats in the Washington, D.C. area. This is part of our Central East region. An example of this that was really a hoot was their sermon slam. They held a sermon slam, and here's how it went down. Of course, you've heard of poetry slams, right? Well, they kind of did a switch up on this, and they invited people to share their spiritual artistry. You think of it as a way to outsource personal wisdom in the collective group. Each person chose a passage from a text that was important to them, a scripture, a poem, a novel, a passage of something. And then they had 5 minutes to reflect on its spiritual significance in the group. And they could interpret it, they could dance it, they could disagree with it, they could tell a personal story that relates to it, they could recite their own poem in response. I mean, anything that was a response to that particular bit of text that they were bringing. They just asked that people speak from their own experience and not proselytize or guilt trip anybody else, but speak from their own experience. And they did one of these as an experiment, and now they do them regularly. And it's said to be the most inspirational event they host, and I think they're right. Let me show you a little video about the Sanctuaries.
My first impression of everybody, when I first came, I was a little bit shy. But as soon as I talked to people, everybody just opened up to me. Everybody learned my name really fast, even though it took me time to learn their names. But everybody just so nice to you. And I think that day I left with a very positive impression about myself because I felt like people made me feel special. People did make me feel like you should go for whatever you are interested. You're an artistic person. Go do it. And I think that made me feel like, oh, wow, there must be something amazing about me and amazing about these people because they're pushing me to do something that I'm in love with, which is art and the environment. And I want to share that to everyone. And I think they listened to me. They listened to what I wanted to say. And I think that was the most amazing thing that I ever got in my life.
I definitely appreciate the love that I get from everybody and everybody from all walks of life. I'm just able to come and be themselves, be genuine. It allows people just to open up when there's probably really no other place that people could do it. Just given, you know, what life has become, you know, everything is hustle and grind and no time, no money, stress. So the Sanctuaries is, I mean, for me, is a safe place that I could go to and I feel like, hey, I want to share, you know, what I do creatively. Sanctuaries allows that.
Everybody's there to connect and learn and share and grow spiritually together and have fun. And somehow that intention, having that goal, allows us to form these really, really deep connections immediately without knowing anything about each other, not knowing where each other is from, not knowing where we work, not knowing what our paths have been like. And it doesn't matter if we come from different backgrounds, whether that be religious or cultural or geographic or whatever social stratifications we have in our society. People come together from and speaking different languages, yet we're all speaking the same truth. And that's just such a blessing.
That's what one of our UU emerging groups is doing. Now, another ministry that encourages people to use third space really effectively, gathering in area coffee shops, is called Life Tree Cafe. Now, Life Tree Cafe is not UU, it's independent Christian, but it's designed to be a comfortable place and time for people to gather weekly, not on Sunday morning, but Thursday night, whatever, to explore life and faith and spirituality and meaning in their lives. It looks and feels like a pretty typical meeting with a friend for food and coffee and a little bit of discussion. The cafes deliberately create an atmosphere that encourages conversation, questions, and personal stories. They ask people to join them to hear some very short, compelling stories about other people. And they do these on little video snippets about 1-2 minutes. There's stories from the news, there's stories from their own lives, there's stories of where they see the divine at work in the world around us. At Life Tree Cafe, these gatherings explore all these stories and relate them to people's lives, and they discuss them in small groups of 4 people, little small groups that discuss these stories. And they're being organized across the country. There's a couple of them in Columbus. But there's a quote here. The Life Tree director in Reading, Pennsylvania last year blogged about the very first meeting that they had for the Reading, Pennsylvania Life Tree Cafe. And the director said, "Last evening was amazing. We became concerned that we might have too many people and need to turn some away. Off Avenue Cafe, where they were meeting, holds about 48 people, and last evening, 47 people showed up. Counting our hosts, that made 48. This was their first meeting. The discussion during the event and after was amazing, he writes. I actually think the topic could have been about peanut butter cups, because the people that showed up just wanted to talk. We had discussions from feelings to predestination to angels to loss to reincarnation, and the list goes on and on. People just didn't want to leave. I was up until 1 a.m. because I was so excited. Thank you so much, he writes, for helping us enter this new area of ministry. It's going to change our community. It's going to change us. Low cost, it's a low cost, wonderful outreach service. Life Tree Cafe, check out their webs.
It's people. It's community. It's fun.
It's casual. It's comfortable. It's come on in and sit down and chat.
I mean, it is just come as you are. You can come in shorts and flip-flops and just be yourself.
It's a conversation. It's a time to talk and listen about life.
God always, when we fall down, God always going to pick us up and put it in a better place.
It's a time to reflect. A time to make sense of the world. A time to experience the presence and peace of God. Every week, friendly people gather at Life Tree Cafe to experience captivating stories of real life. Compelling stories about fascinating people, stories from the news, stories of what God is doing in the world around us. And Life Tree Cafe hears your stories and viewpoints too.
People who are open, who are interested in sharing about themselves and learning about other people in a low-stress environment.
Life Tree Cafe, a time to help you look inside and look outside to lend a hand to others. LifeTree Cafe people regularly perform acts of kindness in the community, like surprising a worthy family with a set of new clothes.
Thank you.
LifeTree Cafe. Enjoy an hour a week.
LifeTree for me is a moment where we can just slow down, and it causes pause in my week, in a moment where I can really reflect and really recharge my battery. I come out of each week with a new insight or a new perspective or a tip that really I can take with me. I'm ready.
Refresh, recharge, bring a sense of meaning and purpose to your life. LifeTree Cafe. Doing life, doing good.
No heavy proselytization. No expectation that you join a congregation on Sunday morning. Just outreach and spirituality and meaning. Now, this focus on third place settings also pushes us to rethink our love affair with buildings. This is a lovely building, but it forces us to rethink this stuff. For centuries, the church has acted as if the building makes the congregation, leading to even bigger and better and sometimes kind of grandiose statements of our own worth in concrete and stone. But now, however, some congregations are beginning to see this dependence on buildings as not necessary to their ministries or their definition of what it means to be a faith community. There are congregations who move to a different site every few years and are known by their work rather than their street address or their location on top of a hill. There are congregations who shed their historic on the town square public meeting space buildings in order to conduct worship in more modest facilities. There are congregations who merge and divest themselves of both buildings in order to worship in rented commercial space that creates an opportunity for real liturgic creativity and frees up a ton of financial resources for ministries and outreach and service in the community. Pictures back here are from 2007. A Methodist church in a very poor neighborhood in Yorkshire in England turned its space into a daycare center for young kids because that's what the neighborhood needed. And it's colorful and it's bright and there's jungle gyms and there's Big Bird and all this stuff on the walls. Now, they still hold service there every Sunday morning amidst the jungle gyms and the Big Bird. But they are serving their community in a very concrete way with that resource that they have. And then I want to say a word about small groups. Small group ministry helps fill that need for intimacy and relationship that young adults and a whole lot of other folks are craving. And without a lot of fuss, without a lot of money. Increasingly, small groups that meet regularly off-site in third spaces, are supplementing Sunday morning gatherings. Now, these groups happen in people's homes, in coffee shops, at the beginning or end of a work day rather than Sunday, just like the LifeTree Cafe folk. And offshoots of this focus on small groups, some UU young adults are now engaged in building entirely alternative living communities and co-housing structures. Some of these have turned into new forms of emerging ministries in their neighborhoods. And these small groups help us realize that Sunday morning is not the only time we can gather for community worship. Other than Sunday, worship opportunities are increasingly being adopted by congregations and emerging ministries for a whole host of reasons. I mean, we know that many young families view Sunday morning as their prime time to relax together and be with the kids, and church is not always viewed as the best way to do that. And we know that even older adults increasingly view Sunday morning as a time to settle back and relax or go golfing or spend time with the grandkids who only have Sunday morning available. So what are we offering people? What are we offering besides or in addition to Sunday morning for their spiritual growth? That's a question for us, a serious question. Okay. Another, service, justice witness work. This is a big way of reaching out. It's another strategy to meet that challenge of outreach in new social climate. And it's to sponsor local and national and even global service and mission projects that invite the participation of people from the wider community to work side by side with people from the congregation. Now, we can focus on a lot of local efforts like feeding hungry people, housing the homeless, improving education by adopting a local school. We can partner with other congregations and nonprofit agencies and corporations to establish service presence in the community. But anywhere where there, people are passionate about transforming the world, we can invite them in and we can work with them no matter what their background and their affiliation or lack of affiliation. But this is another way that we can live our values out in the world. Now, some of you have heard me talk about Ginghamsburg United Methodist Church. Love this place. It's a liberal United Methodist church just outside of Dayton. Their focus is clear. Their mission is clear. It's committed to changing the world. Period. Their mission is to bring, grow, and serve, to bring people into a life celebration with God, grow in community, and serve society and the world. And they just celebrated their 150th anniversary. Ginghamsburg was this tiny little rural congregation of about 80 people back in 1980. And they got their new pastor then, Reverend Mike Slaughter. And he was appointed there as their very first full-time minister. Today, over 6,000 people attend their Sunday services in three different campuses across the Dayton area. The church serves more than 40,000 people in the Dayton area with its outreach services. And it is known nationally and internationally. It is known as one of the most racially and ethnically diverse congregations in the United Methodist system. The minister, Mike Slaughter, has become a leading figure in missional church movement, a popular author. He's written a ton of books. He's a speaker. And he's been voted one of the most influential clergy in the United States. The church is also leading the call for the ordination of LGBTQ folk in the Methodist church right now. They offer more than 100 different kinds of life, of small group possibilities and opportunities to provide meaningful ways for folk to gather with one another and live out their faith. Cyber ministry is huge. They have a huge online presence. And since 2005, they have donated over $5.6 million in relief projects in Darfur, in the Sudan, through an initiative called they call the Sudan Project. And they're doing this with sustainable agriculture projects, safe water, sanitation, child development and education, and child and women protection services in Darfur. And every year, the congregation holds a Christmas is not your birthday celebration, and they take up an offering during the Christmas season. People pledge to spend as much on Darfur as they do on their family's Christmas gifts. They split it right down the middle. 500 here, 500 there, 250 here, 250 there. And this is how they raise millions of dollars to do this valuable work in the Darfur area in Sudan. And they also have an annual Change the World weekend in which church members commit to a weekend of community service, and they hold this big, fat, huge conference about how to change the world. And I take my staff there every darn October to learn from them. Let me show you a brief video.
When I ask people, why do you come to Ginghamsburg? I hear one response more often than others. This is the church that actually does something. We have a main location in Tip City, but Ginghamsburg is everywhere. Just a mile down the road from our main campus is the original building. Ginghamsburg was actually born in 1863, the result of a small town revival. 10 new Christians planted a seed of faith that day. If only they could see what their seed has become. Like I said, Ginghamsburg is everywhere. Just behind the original building is our new PATH headquarters. New Path is the organization that oversees all of our community outreach. They run stuff like food pantries, gently used clothing stores, donated furniture distribution, and the gifting of donated vehicles. There's also a medical barn for anyone who needs durable medical equipment and an antique shop for low-cost, non-essential items. In the bottom floor, below New Path, is our counseling center. These folks have given away hundreds of thousands of dollars in uncompensated care. One thing I enjoy most about Ginghamsburg is that we're moving closer to Dayton. Right now, we have two campuses that are extending our reach into the city. The Fort McKinley campus is in Harrison Township on the corner of Salem and Siebenthaler. It could be the most diverse church I've ever been a part of. The people are awesome, and it's incredibly connected to the neighborhood. The Fort has access to all the resources that New Path provides, in addition to GED tutoring, computer stations, and community development. What really pumps me up is the partnership we have with the county. For example, right now we're partnering with local government to build 25 quality homes for low-income families right in the Fort McKinley neighborhood. Our newest campus just opened its doors in Trotwood. We're calling it The Point, and we've given that neighborhood the same promise we gave Fort McKinley, that we will be a church that they can be proud of.
And we're going to move on because I know time is short. On the other hand, I've got some other things I really want to share with you. Another congregation that's doing many of the same things that the folk in Ginghamsburg are doing is The Rock in San Diego. They've perfected the microsite church where they take televisions and projectors and go into homeless shelters and women's protective shelters and actually bring in their Sunday services that way, along with counselors and a lot of social services. And they have the county and the city of San Diego welcome them and work with them in a very intense way. Of course, whoops, we won't show that one. The College of Social Justice, our UU College of Social Justice, has been launching collaborative outreach services. And they have all kinds of different opportunities for people to volunteer from several hours a week to a full day, multi-day, local. People travel, national mission trips, global expeditions of one kind or another. Boulder-Denver Cluster. This is a cluster of UU congregations who have become known in their efforts around the immigration sanctuary movement. Because of their support together, First Unitarian Denver was able to actually become the first UU congregation to house an immigrant as part of that new sanctuary movement. It was working in response to the larger immigration crisis, and there was a wonderful story about that in the World Magazine last fall, and there's a great video about that online. Now, we know about diversity. We've talked about that. We've seen that. The sanctuaries in Washington, D.C. If I had more time, I'd show you this wonderful one from Middle Collegiate Church in Manhattan, New York, because their mission is to create cross-cultural, cross-ethnic dialogue. That is their mission as a church, and is a wonderful video online. There's so many people doing wonderful things out here, guys.
How would my life be different?
We know that spiritual formation, public events. I don't need to go a lot onto those. We know that there are congregations forming partnerships. 13 congregations in Northeast Texas share everything. They share their staff. They share their budgets. They are sharing their adult education. They're sharing their social justice outreach in new and wonderful ways because they know that they cannot do it alone. So when you think about your own cluster, what are the potential things that your cluster could be doing if you really, 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 really shared with the other congregations and looked at what you could do together better than you're able to do alone? I mean, our history, our Cambridge platform that began congregational polity was not a space for Lone Ranger churches. It assumed a covenantal relationship and community of congregations. Let's see here. Come on, come on. Then we've got emerging ministries from the Unitarian Universalists. They're all over the place, different kinds, small groups, creating meaning in new ways. How many of you saw this video at GA? Two of you. Oh, dear. Okay. Well, bless your souls. I know it's... Can I ask you permission to see this? Yeah. Okay. Can you hit it for me, Cliff? Thanks.
Unitarian Universalists know as well as anyone that our religious landscape is changing. Though people need our faith as much as ever, they're less likely to participate in traditional forms of religion. So we need lots of new forms.
Emerging ministries are any group, project, or endeavor that is grounded in our faith and brings people together in covenanted and intentional ways. Emerging ministries take many forms, one road, many lanes. Some of our emerging ministries are congregations, like Sacred Path.
Sacred Path is called to heal and transform the world, one act of love at a time. Sacred Path members take our voices and hands into the world by singing in prisons and marching for racial justice, by cultivating community gardens and organizing neighborhood peace festivals.
Some are campus ministries, like the UUs of the College of Worcester.
As emerging adults enter the world, they are in need of a welcoming community that provides a safe space to ask questions, to discover who they are and what they believe.
Some of our emerging ministries are multi-site, like the cluster that makes up Oak Ridge, Tennessee Valley, Foothills, and Westside UUs.
The work is not about preserving the institution. The work is about figuring out how to be inspired, uplifted, on fire, generous, and radical instruments of the holy. Institutions may crumble, but love never fails.
Some are missional communities, like Sacred Fire.
Sacred Fire UU is co-creating ways for us to be in relationship with those who share our vision of the beloved community, but who aren't seeking church. Our ministry's central mission is truly to give life the shape of justice.
Some of our emerging ministries are meeting groups, like Create Meaning.
Our Create Meaning program taught us a lot about what we need to do to be able to reach others who are spiritual but not religious, so that people could see our way of religion as part of the larger cultural milieu that is the new American religious landscape.
And some are hybrids, like the Sanctuaries in Washington, D.C.
The Sanctuaries is an artist collaborative that focuses on social justice issues. There is something truly spiritually deep about connecting with other people and creating together. It just seems so simple, but it's definitely spiritual, and it's definitely something that connects us to community and to one another.
And what is supporting all of this stuff? Something that you may not realize is that our district, our region, has had to change, has had to do new things and structure itself in order to support more of these emerging ministries and support more of our congregations and beyond and moving ahead. So I want to show you, once again, just a really, really short one from GA where we talk about what the region has done in terms of restructuring so that you understand it when you come to District Assembly this spring and have to vote on this.
Because we're at our best when we work together, we need to remove barriers that separate us and make collaboration difficult. It no longer makes sense to have our staff in the field divided into 19 separate districts. In the last few years, we've made tremendous progress in creating one unified national staff. This effort has gone by the name of regionalization. Scott Taylor, our Director of Congregational Life, has been doing heroic work to move this along. Scott, tell us where we are and why you're so passionate about this work.
Thanks, Peter. Regionalization, as Peter said, is one of our UUA's most creative, extensive, and inspiring undertakings. Again, as Peter mentioned, practically speaking, it involves restructuring ourselves from 19 largely independent districts into five stronger, more aligned regions. Each region is pursuing this structural streamlining and collaboration in their own unique way, but all, every single one of them are seeing tremendous gifts. We have reduced administrative and governance redundancies, freed up capacity for more congregational support, and created larger, more flexible, and better integrated field staff teams. But the larger gift is spiritual. From its beginning, regionalization has been about modeling and embodying our theology of interdependence. This is ultimately why the UUA has made it a priority. The larger hope is to inspire and support a similar deepening of relationship between our congregations and our covenanted communities. As we all move together into the ever-increasing challenges of 21st century church life, there is less and less room for the imagined autonomy of the past. Regionalization's great gift to all of us is its invitation to shift from being an association of independent congregations to an association of radically interdependent congregations.
And of course, all of this support for new ministries is requiring new ways of training ministers. I'm not going to show you that video, but it is online from our UU Ministers Association. They are training people in entrepreneurial ministry now. And remember our roller coaster of change. This is our final slide here. You know, this is a lot of data. This is a lot of change. This is a lot of new stuff going on. And if you feel overwhelmed, just remember the roller coaster of change and look and see where you're at on that roller coaster. And we do need to ask ourselves, as we look at this, can our UUism be the faith for these new times? Can we change like that little mountain stream and keep our essence, but take on a new form? Can we step out like Nakshon in that cartoon we saw and express our desire to experiment? What is our core and what do we stand for? And so thank you. I thank you for those of you who stayed with it. Bless your souls. There's lots of good stuff happening.